Uwaga! Wysokie napięcie.
Hello and welcome everyone. My name is Bartłomiej Derski. I'm a journalist at wysokienapięcie.pl and you're listening Uwaga! Wysokie napięcie podcast. As a host of today's podcast, I have a privilege to talk with the head of one of the largest investors in Polish energy sector. I did mention in Polish energy sector, not in Poland, because technically you are investing in Polish exclusive economic zone of the Baltic Sea, not at the Polish territory. So you now might probably guess that we will talk about offshore wind farms at the Baltic Sea. Our today's guest is Mike Crowley, President and CEO of Northland Power. It's a Canadian company which, together with Polish Orlen, is developing a big project on Polish Baltic Sea. It's, of course, offshore wind project. Hello, Mike, and thank you for being with us today, joining us, and the opportunity to talk about the offshore wind farm.
I'm looking forward to the discussion.
Thank you. So can we start from some numbers to show what the project is really, how big it is, how much it will cost, and when it will go online?
So the project is about 1.2 gigawatts, so 1,200 megawatts in scale. So that alone puts it as one of the largest offshore wind projects in the world right now, right?
Wow. So it's impressive.
It's a very large project. I mean, if you look at relative to our other projects, our biggest project otherwise is 600 megawatts. In Taiwan, we're looking to start construction soon on a 1 gigawatt offshore wind project. So it's a very large project for any energy type of energy, but particularly for offshore wind. We would be looking to take the project through into kind of construction later this year, and certainly in terms of kind of more intensive construction in 2024. And the project is expected to come online in 2026.
All right. So how much electricity you're supposed to produce, you're supposed to produce in this project?
I mean, it would be enough electricity for certainly a modest sized city, right? So it's a lot of electricity when you look at it in that context. The project cost, you were asking about the cost before. I mean, it's several billion dollars. I haven't got it in zloty, but it's a very, very large project.
All right. And you, as a Northland Power, invest in different parts of the world. So the Baltic Sea is just one of that. I guess you invest in North America and in Asia as well. Am I correct?
Yeah. I mean, we got our start in Canada, of course. We're a Canadian company. But we spent the last 10 years really investing mostly outside of Canada. So in offshore wind in Europe, we operate three large offshore wind facilities in the North Sea, Germany and the Netherlands. We operate onshore renewables in the Americas, so in Canada, U.S., Colombia, Mexico. And we also are developing offshore wind in Asia, so in Korea, Taiwan, and as well as looking at offshore wind in Europe as well. So we've got a project, but roughly a gigawatt onshore wind, offshore wind project in Scotland, and a 1.5 gigawatt floating offshore wind project in Scotland. So those are two sites that we secured last year. We're also involved in a partnership with RWE on a large offshore wind project in Germany right now. And we're always looking for more opportunities throughout Europe. But kind of onshore renewables in the Americas right now and storage, offshore wind in Asia, offshore wind in Europe, and we're looking at some onshore renewables in Poland as well.
So you can compare a lot of different parts of the world. So how does Polish Baltic area looks like when you compare it with other parts of the world?
The government's created a great investment climate for offshore wind in Poland. It really has allowed Poland to stand out as one of the most attractive new markets for offshore wind in the world. There's a lot of new markets opening up around the world for offshore wind, so there's a lot of competition for development, for investments, and for a supply chain. And Poland's really done a great job of creating a climate that attracts all of them.
Okay, so we now know the part that the government is supporting the development of offshore wind. But how does the wind looks like there? How does the depth of the sea looks like? So is Baltic Sea really competitive when you compare it, for example, with Scotland, where wind is blowing much more, I guess?
Yep.
So if it's really enough wind on the Baltic Sea to build a really competitive project, because it will have to compete in a future market with other technologies.
So, I mean, there's different factors you look at. Certainly, if you look at Scotland and the part of Scotland that our projects are in, it's extremely windy, right? So that would be, it would be more stronger wind speeds than you'd see in the Baltic Sea. But the Baltic Sea wind is still very, very good, certainly very good when you look at it relative to the North Sea or northeast of the U.S., where there's a lot of offshore wind development. So it's certainly competitive in terms of wind speeds with those markets. In terms of water depths, geotech, it is generally favorable for offshore wind. So it, from a technical standpoint, it's relatively easy to build. And when you look at some markets that have very strong winds, like whether it's Taiwan or Scotland, which you just mentioned, it also has an impact on your operations and your construction. So it does restrict kind of how much time you have for both of those, the windows, okay, the weather windows.
Yeah.
So there's a trade-off.
To build a wind farm.
That's okay. Right. That's right. So in Scotland, where we are, you'll have a much shorter construction window than you would in the Baltic Sea and in the Polish Baltic Sea. So there's trade-offs.
Okay. That's an interesting factor. I've never think about that. Yeah. Okay. So when we goes to the comparison between different technologies, so we've got onshore wind farms, we've got photovoltaic,
yeah,
and of course biomass, biogas, and so on. So we've got plenty different green technologies that can supply our future power system. So how does the offshore wind looks when we compare it? I think it's still quite costly. It costs more for megawatt hour comparing with photovoltaic, for example, or onshore wind. And am I right? And if am I right, this will change in the future? Do you think that the scale, new technologies will bring costs down?
Well, it's certainly changing, right? And so the cost of offshore wind has come down dramatically in the last 10 years. And it, even when we look at the first offshore wind project that we built in the Netherlands compared to what we're seeing today, so that project had 4 megawatt turbines, right? So,
and now we're talking about 15?
15 megawatt? For the Baltic, yeah. power project, right? So 15. So that's just in the span. That project went into operations in 2016. So that's just 7 years later. You're now looking at turbines that are almost 4 times as big, right, in terms of amount of electricity that they can generate. So it's been a lot of change there. And that reduces just you need fewer cables to interconnect all the turbines. You obviously need fewer foundations, fewer towers. All of that becomes more efficient. And even just to construct them, as we were talking about trying to find weather windows when you can go out there onto the ocean and construct these things, you don't need as big a weather window because you got fewer turbines to install and fewer turbines to service as well, right? Mm-hmm. So it makes all of that a lot easier. So it's all heading in the direction of becoming less costly. At the same time, the whole sector, whether it's onshore wind, solar, offshore wind, battery storage, lithium-ion battery storage, all of those costs have come up in the last year, just general commodity inflation, but just macro inflation as well that's been going on in the market. So there has been some inflation and some increase in capital costs, but that's been all across all renewables and indeed probably all power generation in general, right?
Yeah, I guess it's one of the biggest challenges now. Do you see the possibility that the costs will be even lower than, for example, for onshore wind farms in the future?
It's not a huge gap between offshore wind and onshore wind or solar today. Certainly not as big a gap as there used to be. The advantage of offshore wind is just the scale that you can get, right? So the world needs affordable energy. It also needs a huge volume of energy too, right? So if you look at decarbonizing energy more broadly speaking and obviously reducing dependence on certain suppliers of energy, you need a lot of green electrons to do that, and including to convert into hydrogen. So offshore wind, you can have projects that are 1.2 gigawatts in size, maybe even bigger eventually. Onshore wind and solar, they're still very good projects, but they generally are kind of smaller, kind of 100, 200 megawatts in size, right?
All right. So you've mentioned inflation is one of the challenges you're facing now. Are there any others? There was a discussion that there will be lack of ships for the offshore wind industry. There might be a lack of some kind of materials to build those kind of facilities. So what are real challenges now for offshore wind projects around the world?
So what's really important is that governments like the U.S. with the Inflation Reduction Act, the Canadian government's putting in place investment tax credits to encourage hydrogen, renewable storage. And the EU, as you know, is taking steps to further incentivize and encourage the renewable sector. And Poland's been very explicit with some really good targets for offshore wind, I think 20 as much as 30 megawatts or gigawatts of offshore wind, depending on what date you pick or what deadline you pick. So all of that creates the right environment for the supply chain to invest in more capacity. And so all of that's kind of developed over the last 6 to 12 months. So there's always a bit of a lag. And so what we're expecting is that the supply chain will start now investing in more capacity, knowing that there's going to be projects and knowing that they're going to have customers for their products, and that's got to happen now. So there's a bit of a lag, and when there's that lag, you do see some constraints on vessels, on all of that. But we would hope that the signals coming out now are clear enough that those investments in the supply chain will happen. That's the most important thing for the sector to continue growing.
Okay, so the price is going up, so the supply is also increasing, like the demand side
it's both prices go up, so there's a view that they can get reasonable margins, so they'll invest, they can be profitable, and some of them were challenged with being profitable the last few years just because the sector got probably too competitive. But the second thing is just knowing that there's going to be a volume of, so first of all, they want to know that they can get acceptable margins for their investors, right? And the second thing is that if once they've got comfortable around that there actually is going to be a big enough market that they should invest in more capacity. And so those two things are starting to form.
Mm-hmm. All right. Now, most of the wind offshore wind farms are supported somehow by governments, by some support schemes. But do you think that in near future we can expect some farms which will be contracted with some big industry as a companies which will need an electricity? So, for example, based on corporate purchasing power agreements and so on, without any support from government side?
I think you'll see more of that. You're certainly seeing that with onshore renewables in a lot of markets, and you're starting to see that in some markets with offshore. renewables, or offshore wind. So we entered into a corporate offtake for 744 megawatts of offshore wind in Taiwan last year. So that was very public. So you're going to see more of that. I still think it's important for governments to step up and offer revenue contracts. It's important to attract capital, including debt lenders to the market. So I think given the amount of electrons that are needed, as I say, green electrons that are needed in terms of energy security, but also in terms of decarbonization targets, you need a lot. So corporations will step up, but I think you also need governments to step up too.
Okay. Let's talk about your investments in Poland. Do you see any space to more future investments in offshore wind or onshore other renewables or maybe storage because it's also part of your business now?
Yeah, I mean, so we announced a large storage project in Canada last week. So it's
large. So
what? 250 megawatts.
All right.
4 hours of storage. So it's a lot, right? And it's the biggest battery storage project, certainly in Canada. It's one of the biggest in the world. So certainly amongst the biggest in the world. So that was just announced last week with the Ontario and the Canadian government, with Northland being the majority investor in the project. So we'd like to do more of that. We think the key to, as you grow out more and more renewables, is to make sure that you stabilize the grid as well, and ideally stabilize the grid with a zero carbon storage solution, which is what a battery storage would be. Pumped hydro is another good example of that. So we would certainly be interested in doing some of that in Europe and in Poland specifically. We have some relationships with onshore wind and solar developers already in Poland where we're working together to see if there's a way for us to invest in some of those projects. And we would love to do more offshore wind in Poland. It's been a great experience so far.
Okay. And photovoltaic as well?
Yeah, and photovoltaic as well. So we have some relationships with different photovoltaic developers as well.
Okay. So how about the battery energy storage systems? Are they now competitive or it still needs some support because it's still on early stage of development?
It depends on the market, like the energy market in any or the power market in any country or region. So there's likely some need for a capacity payment to underpin the investment and to get some debt onto the project so you can get the most efficient capital structure for the project. But there's also, depending on how power markets work anywhere, there's some opportunity to do some arbitrage, right, where you kind of pull power from the grid when prices are lower, and then when prices ramp up during the day, you can sell it back into the grid.
Yeah. For now, I'm not sure if we still has got some low power prices during the middle of the night because
they're elevated. Yeah,
yeah. But for sure, when there will be a lot of wind in energy system, powers will go down, and that will be the future for
you
battery energy storage. So, do you believe that the storage will goes to, for example, steel pipe pumping hydro or to electrochemical batteries or to some mechanical batteries like air batteries or so on?
There's a huge amount of capital being poured into R&D around storage. For years, that's been going on because everybody sees where the energy sector is going, that you're going to need storage capacity, right? That eventually you're not going to see new gas-fired generation getting built. You still need it now, to be clear, but you're not going to see new gas-fired generation being built. So you'll need something to stabilize these grids with all of this intermittent renewables. So I think right now what makes sense is battery storage, lithium-ion battery storage, and pumped hydro, and so you'll see a bunch of those projects move ahead because the systems need the capacity. But fast forward 5 years, I think you'll see a whole suite of other technologies that are available as well.
Mm-hmm. And when we are talking about the future, do you see, for example, offshore wind farms on really deep water in the middle of the ocean generating hydrogen? Of course, that should be floating wind farms generating hydrogen, and ships that will tank it and bring it to the shore.
I think you could certainly see that. There's some onshore projects moving ahead based on an assumption of based on a business case that is solely taking those green electrons and converting them into green molecules, hydrogen, green ammonia for shipping. Mm-hmm. You're going to see the same thing with floating and with the offshore fixed foundation offshore wind too, I think, over time.
Okay, so it sounds good.
Yeah.
I hope we'll develop in this way and bring fully green electricity into the market. Mike, I want to thank you for showing us how this offshore wind industry is developing. What are you doing in Poland? What are your future plans? Thank you so much, guys, for watching us or listening us. It was a pleasure. It was a great pleasure to talk with you.
It's a very exciting time for renewable energy generation and development globally, but particularly in Poland. There's just a lot of opportunity here and a lot of need, so it's an exciting time.
So thank you that you are here and you're helping us to develop that.
Thank you. Thank you. Thanks for your time.
Uwaga! Wysokie napięcie.